The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the November 16th, 2013 edition of my Saturday afternoon program. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and I have a guest today, a very interesting guest from Warsaw, Poland. He is an author of two books that have caused quite a stir among Polish historians and politicians alike. His name is Peter Zajkowicz. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Hello. Thank you very much for an invitation and honor to be in your show.
Well, thank you. I hope you still think so when it's over, but I'm going to be I'm going to be nice because I want us to get along, and I think there could be nothing better than to have good, honest relations between those who are on the I guess I say between Germans and Poles, but I'm not really a German. I'm an American, but I'm a German American, and I take a lot of interest in what is this whole period of time, you know, that we're going to be talking about. And you have written these two books that has brought up such interesting questions and a whole new look at some of these historical questions during the time of World War II. And you have, let me go through a little bit of your history here just real quick. You were born in Warsaw, and you live now in Warsaw. You are a historian, and you were a journalist, or maybe still a journalist, in the years 2000-2012. You worked for something called the Republic, it says here, and then in this year, you are deputy editor of something called I Think That, and editor-in-chief of something called Right to the Point, which you explained to me make more sense in Polish than they do in English, the titles. But they pretty much make sense in English, too. So was that correct, what I just said?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. The magazines are conservative. There is a weekly, in Polish it's called Do Rzeczy, and I am the deputy editor-in-chief of it, and I'm editor-in-chief of the history magazine, mm-hmm. that is called Do Rzeczy Historia, and we are conservative, and we are very, very anti-Soviet. We hate the Reds.
Okay. Well, that's good. And you say we. So I was wanting to ask you if you are pretty much on your own with your point of view, but obviously if you're with these magazines, you're not. There's quite a number of the younger people like yourself. You are 33 years old right now, correct? 33 and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the books and the views from the books are very, very controversial, that's true, and they spark a huge discussion, but I'm not alone. There is a couple of people, historians and some politicians that think the same as me, and we are right in the middle of a small war on history, but I think that logic and right is on our side, and we will win this battle. Without a doubt.
Well, that's great. Well, I love it. And everybody's been looking for young people to take a look at history and to come up with some new ideas, new ways of looking at this history, which has been kind of stuck in from a certain point of view for a long time now. So let's go on here. So therefore, I would call you you're conservative and you're an unapologetic Polish patriot, right? Even though you criticized Polish leadership in the past and maybe some of today's leadership. But you are very patriotic about your Polishness, aren't you?
Well, yes, yes. I think that I'm very patriotic, and this is the reason why I'm criticizing the leaders, Polish leaders from the Second World War period. And the reason is very simple. We lost this war, and we lost it pretty badly. We lost the half of our territory with Vilno and Lviv, two most beautiful Polish cities that were captured by the Soviets, taken away from us. We've lost our independence for almost half a century. We lost a couple of million people that were killed, murdered by both occupiers, the Germans and the Soviets. So this was the biggest defeat in the history of the Polish nation, and its history is very, very tragic. And according to Polish mainstream historians, everything what happened to us was the fault of those bad guys, Hitler and Stalin. And I think that it's only half true, because we've made also a terrible, terrible mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know, I have always thought that it was very difficult for Polish people to admit their mistakes, particularly when it comes to this period of time, the World War II. And before it, and all through the 20th century, they're not very good at looking at things objectively. How would you answer that?
Well, yeah, I think that the reason is that this is a very sensitive issue. The reason of this is the fact that we suffered really a lot. Mm-hmm. And the scale of genocide in the Polish territories is really apocalyptic, it's really huge, especially among Polish elites, intelligentsia. They were just wiped out during the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And still the Poles are very anti-German and very anti-Soviet or anti-Russian, as you wish. And it's very hard to say that, you know, that it was not only their fault, that maybe the other different Polish policy, different decisions would probably make us better, maybe, because I'm absolutely sure that if Polish minister, foreign minister of Poland, Mr. Józef Beck, if he would decide in the late 30s to say yes to the proposal that was made by Germany, probably Poland would win the war.
Yes, yeah, and you've made that case in your book, Pact Ribbentrop-Beck. And
yes.
I think we'll go into that after we go into your first book. I don't know why, I've just kind of got it set up that way. And, what did I say? We'll go into that. Your first book after we go into your second book.
Okay.
A little bit.
The first book was Pact Ribbentrop-Beck, and the second one is Madness 44.
Right. Okay. And let me just sneak in a couple of questions here before we get into all that. And what is your opinion of the current Prime Minister of Poland, Donald Tusk?
Oh, please. You know, this is... I am a historian, and really, if this is not a problem, just I'd like to skip this question, because I'm trying to not get involved in the current politics of Poland. I have to tell you that the history of Poland is much more interesting than its present.
Okay, I want to ask you too how you view Germany today. And not just today's Germany, but also Third Reich Germany today. Any different from what it was viewed back during the war?
Well, I think that the Polish-German relations right now are really great. And, the problem with Poland for almost whole our history was that... I will start like that. We have a most terrible and address in the whole world. We have to live between Germany and Russia. between the hammer and the anvil. And for many, many hundred years, the Polish elites decided that if we have two enemies, one on the right and one on the left, that we have to search for the allies far, far away. In France, in America, in Great Britain. And that's what we did during the Second World War. And the price that we paid for this illusion was really devastating for Poland. And there was a very famous historian, German historian, called Goloman, and he said that in geopolitics of Eastern Europe can be only three scenarios: Poland with Germany against Russia, Poland with Russia against the Germany, or the Germany and Russia against Poland. And the third one is this is the end of Poland. The German-Russian alliance means the Finnish Polonia in Latin, which means Poland is Finnish. And in my opinion, Poles have to choose between Russians and Germans. It's really hard to, you know, after this, what we suffered from the, both our neighbors, it's hard to accept this, but I think that the logic of this is absolutely 100%, and I think that right now you have to just take a look on both of those countries. From one hand, you have Germany, and from other hand, you have Russia, and it's obvious who we have to choose, and the Polish state made the decision 20 years ago. Our relations with Germany are really great right now. We are very, very good neighbors. We are together in the European Union, and it works quite well. And as you probably know, our relations with Russia are terrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. If I don't know what, if you came, you did, this is what your Pact Ribbentrop Beck is about, but you don't really go as at the end of it, you still want to turn against Germany, but you say that you do admit here that if you had sided with Germany at the time you had the opportunity to do so in 1938 and 1939, then things would have gone very different for you, right? But by that unwillingness to go with either side caused all that suffering, because you said we have suffered so much from both our neighbors. But that tremendous suffering that you refer to in 39 is because you didn't side with either Germany or the Soviet Union. And of course, if you had sided with the Soviet Union, they would have betrayed you in the end. But I don't think that Germany would have done so.
Any well. Comments on that? Yeah, of course. I don't think that it's hard to say what would happen 100%. But Hitler was looking for an ally in the East from the year 1934, when he signed the pact with Marshal Piłsudski, that I admire. He wanted to Poland to be this ally. And he was asking us time and time again, sign a pact with me and we will go together to destroy the Soviet Union. And there was no other option, because there was no Soviet option, because the Stalin did not want any alliance with Poland. So in my opinion, if we would say yes to the proposal made by Berlin, war would probably, I'm sure, would be probably completely different for Poland, but the whole Europe. War would started from the German attack on France, and then the Polish, German, and Japanese forces would attack Soviet Union, and I'm sure that the 30 Polish divisions would made this war successful. The Moscow would be captured in the late 1941, and the most terrible regime in the history of mankind, the Bolshevism, would collapse in the year 1941, or in probably in the winter. And speaking about the geopolitics of the late 30s, so Hitler was looking for an alliance in the East. Poland say no, so he had to look for another ally, and he had no other option, and he had to send his messenger to Moscow. And this was the tragedy of Poland, that we provoked the pact Ribbentrop-Molotov, the most devastating and terrible document in the history of Poland.
Yeah, you say it's a tragedy of Poland. It could, it also should be seen as a responsibility of Poland, or at least, you know, that they added to make that happen that way. So they added to their own problems, but then that's why you call it a tragedy. But also, they need to take some responsibility for these decisions. And I don't see, but looks like we've gone into your first book here. Well, let's just continue here. Because there's some questions about this pact. I am under the same impression of what you say, that that Hitler wanted Poland as an ally against the Soviet Union. But I have a listener who has sent me a few emails about this, and he is a historic revisionist, and he's takes a lot of interest in this, and he's done a lot of read a ton of books about it. And he said that about this pact, Ribbentrop pact, that he said, "I'm not aware of any offer by Ribbentrop of a joint campaign against the Soviet Union. Could you please ask him what he bases this on?" Well, before you answer, I sent him some information that I had written here and there, and he wasn't satisfied with that. And he said that was all well and good, but I told him that my understanding that in the 1934 non-aggression pact with Poland is not the pact that is being spoken of, that later on in 1939 Hitler was serious about forming an alliance with Poland, but he said he doesn't know of any such thing. So what do you base this on?
Well, I will start from the thing that really surprised me. When I was working on the pact, Ribbentrop pact, at the same time, in Germany, the famous German historian, his name is Dieter Müller. He's the leading historian of the Bundeswehr, a military historical office, I think that's called like that. Mm-hmm. When he was working on his own book, it's called The Common Enemy in Polish. I am not quite sure what is the name of the title of the English translation. And this and the book was actually printed in Poland after my book. So I did not know about the book when I was working on the pact Ribbentrop pact. And surprisingly, he came to the same conclusion by analyzing the Wehrmacht archives. And according to Dieter Müller, when Hitler came to power, the Wehrmacht was preparing a plan of war against Poland in alliance with Soviet Union in the Rapallo Agreement spirit. And Hitler said, after the non-aggression pact with Piłsudski, skip that, just throw all the plans to trash and prepare a new plan, a plan of common Polish, Japanese, German invasion on Soviet Union. And in the book of Dieter Müller, there are a lot of maps and documents quoted from the German Ministry of Foreign Affairs, from the German Oberkommando der Wehrmacht, and other very important institutions. And according to those documents, there are no doubt about that the Hitler wanted to have Poland on his side, and he wanted to attack Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And there is an anecdote about that, because Hitler once said that in the 20th century, three countries defeated Russia. First of all, It was defeated in the year 1905 by Japan. Then in the year 1917 by the Germany, and then in the year 1920 by Poland. And Hitler said that attack of these three countries together on Soviet Union would destroy Soviet Union, and I think that he was right. But speaking about my book, I based on the Polish documents from the archives of our foreign ministry, on Polish books about that, and there is no doubt. When I was analyzing all the meetings, and there was a lot of meetings between the Polish and German officials in the 30s. From the German side, it was mainly Göring. Hitler gave him the order to make this alliance with Poland. And during all those meetings, they were asking again and again, go to the Soviet Union with us. And there was even a plan of partition Soviet Union between Poland, Japan, and Germany. Japan wanted Siberia. Germany wanted the north of the European part of Russia, which was of course obvious, because I'm sure that you are aware of the fact that in the north of Russia there was a lot of Germans living there since 19th and 18th century, and Poland was supposed to get Ukraine because of the big Polish influence there. Kyiv and probably half of Belarus.
I read that in your in the summaries of your book, the Pact book, and I found that kind of strange because Hitler was always saying that he wanted Ukraine, that the Ukraine area and was the area that he really wanted for Germany, so because of the farming, the rich farmland there, and that's what they needed. And south of there, and including the Black Sea area and so on.
Well, yes, but the problem with this is that all the quotes from Hitler speaking about, you know, this crazy idea of colonizing Ukraine for the German farmers and making the Ukrainians slaves, actually it's the part of the General Plan Ost. And the other ideas that were actually, they prepared it in the year 1939, 1940, 1941, and before that, before the year 1938, 39, there were no plans like that. And I think that Hitler was he was counting for a good, a trade pact with Poland, and I think that there would be no problem if this partition of Soviet Union would occur, that Poland could, sell Germans the Ukrainian food, etc., etc. But
but your book ends up that Poland turns against Germany totally in a pretty treasonous way and makes alliance with the French and with the British and Americans, which I really have to question. I get the feeling. I'll just say, stick this in here, and you can laugh at it, or if you think it's laughable. But that you have your beginning basis for your book, which is very good, and then as it goes on, you feel like maybe you have to not antagonize all the Polish historians and Polish feeling and so on so much, so you come back around to turning against Germany and turning back toward the British and the Americans again. It doesn't seem to make much sense.
No, okay. It's all right. I will just it. Okay, so I will start like that. In my opinion, sense of writing and about history and knowing the history is not remembering all the dates. History dates, because if we got Wikipedia, there is no sense of it. The real sense of reading history or learning history is in the famous Latin quotation, Historia Magistra Vita Est. And there was two wars during the 20th century, the First World War and the Second World War. The First World War was won by Poland, and we lost the second one. And every Pole have to ask himself, what was the difference between the ending of the First World War and the Second World War? And answer for this is that the ideal scenario for Poland was the scenario of the First World War, when first of all, the Germany defeated Russia in the year 1917, and then a year later, Germany was defeated by the Anglo-Saxon forces and French forces on the Western Front in the year 1918. And this is the reason why the collapse of both our neighbors, Russia and Germany, this is the reason why Poland get back its independence in the year 1918.
Well, let me just stick in here. Oh, finish that.
I will try to do it short.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, Poland, the only way for Poland to win the Second World War is repeating this scenario. And first of all, the Germany should won the war with Soviet Union, destroy the Soviet Union, capture Moscow, kill Stalin and Beria and all those terrible Soviet monsters. And then, after defeating Soviet Union, the best scenario for Poland would be the collapse of Germany on the Western Front. And then Poland, on the ruins of Soviet Union and ruins of Germany, would have a chance to become a very powerful state, the main player in Eastern Europe. So, in my opinion, Poland should be in alliance with Germany in the first part of the Second World War, till the destruction of Soviet Union. And then, as you said, from the Polish point of view, it would be quite reasonable to change sides and attack Germany in the end of the war. And just as Romanians did, Hungarians was trying to do that, Finns, the brave Finns. So this is actually the perfect scenario for Poland.
Well, it is the perfect scenario for Poland. It seems to me like, you know, a wishful dream for how to make, you know, Poland happiest. And that's what they would really like.
This is the book. The book is about that.
Yes, right, it is. But let me, what I was interrupting about was that, in the first place, you said Germany defeated Russia, or it was already the Soviet Union. No, was it the Soviet Union yet? it was Russia in the First World War. Mm-hmm. And but I don't say that Germany really defeated Russia in the First World War in that sense, because they didn't really want to win. Lenin didn't have the means, and he wasn't interested in it, and they just kind of gave up and let Germany win and got out of the whole thing. They didn't want to be involved in it. And that's part of that whole plan of the Jewish control of the Soviet Union, that they're trying to get other people to fight, and then they will take advantage of the situation later on. So I think that Russia just kind of dropped out of that, don't you think? They just quit fighting. They didn't put much into it. And so that ended, that gave Germany the freedom to not be fighting on the Eastern Front and could go and fight mostly on the Western Front. But they had too much against them, and they are being undermined in their own country. I do believe that World War One.
Well, first of all, I don't think that this was the Bolshevik regime was a part of the, as you said, the Jewish plan. I consider the Bolsheviks as an international gang of like a mafia style, but international. There were Jews in it, of course, but there were a lot of Poles, like Felix Dzerzhinski, who was Polish nobleman and one of the bloodiest murderers of the Bolshevik regime. There were a lot of Georgians like Stalin and different people. So this is the first issue. But I really think that Russia, and when I said Russia, I mean the Tsarist Russia, independent Russia, lost the First World War. The Russian army just did not exist in the year 1917. The scale of devastation in Russia was really huge, and an agreement in Brzezd, this was actually the act of surrender from the point of view of from the side of Russia. So definitely they lost the First World War.
Oh, they lost it, but they didn't care about losing it, because they were really interested in taking over Germany eventually. So that was not in the rest of Europe. So they wanted that war to continue on in Europe.
That's true. And before the show, you said that you were pro-German, and I'm sure that you will be delighted to hear that Poland in the year 1920, during the Battle of Warsaw, we stopped armies of Tukhachevsky. The Red Army marched to Germany, so we saved Germany from Bolshevism and probably the whole Europe.
I know. I know that victory took place. The Poles had that victory there. Now my other question that I had was about the Ukraine, back to the Ukraine and Hitler not wanting the Ukraine. In Mein Kampf, Hitler wrote about that. And then in his second book, which I believe is authentic, Hitler's second book, where he goes into the geopolitics so much and into the geography, and he very, very much talked about it there, that Ukraine was essential for Germany to continue subsisting, that he preferred having a kind of a colonization in Europe, and he much preferred it to the east, not to the west, than having colonies around the world like France and Britain and even the United States in essence had. And so this was his thinking always. I don't know, I can't quite believe that he would ever have said, okay, we'll take the north of Russia and we'll give all the Ukraine and all of that area to Poland.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not all, but this is the sense of the propositions that were made by Goering. Came a couple of times. He was, by the way, Goering was a huge hunter. He was a chief hunter of the Third Reich, and he was hunting in Poland with President Mościcki, the Polish president, and the Polish marshal Śmigłowicz. Mm-hmm. And during those trips, he was even showing maps of partition of Soviet Union, and according to the Polish documents, the sense of this proposition was, we take the north and you take the south. So I think that Goering is the better person to be asked about that. But I think that Hitler plans, you know, he was just trying to react on what was going on right now. And, you know, in Mein Kampf, he wrote a lot of things. I don't know if we can... he was in the 30s, he was quite pragmatic. And I think that maybe, as I told you before, Hitler would probably, if Poland would say yes, he would probably be willing to sign, a contract with Poland, and Poland would just send to Germany the food from Ukraine, and I think that it would be all right for him, especially for the first years of war.
Okay. Well, I do agree with you that Hitler wanted Poland as an ally, and this listener that I was that I referred to just can't quite see that. In fact, he wrote back again finally and said that he's back in 1934 though. He said he says you write now. He's speaking to me now because I sent him what I wrote. I had written this: Hitler wanted a German-Polish alliance against the Soviet Union, but Pilsudski declined. Well, I was still back at that time, but I still think that, again, in 1939, he very, very definitely was working on Poland. And that is where Poland and I guess you agree with me, really made its big mistake by not and what was the reason for that mistake? Why were they unwilling by then in 39? Now, Hasso Kastrup has tried to argue with me that Poland was, because of what happened in Czechoslovakia, the Poles were scared of Germany and didn't trust Germany, and that's why they wouldn't do that. What do you think of that?
Well, first of all, there's another argument that came to my mind right now about this Ukrainian issue.
Okay.
During the last chance visit in Warsaw, it was in January 1939, Joachim von Ribbentrop, speaking with the Polish officials about the Baltic issue, because one of the biggest problems in German-Polish relations was, of course, the Baltic Sea problem. Mm-hmm. He said to them that the Black Sea is also a sea. So, which meant that Poland will probably be able to look after the victory in the east to capture the lands near the Black Sea. But speaking about the reason why Beck said no, the first reason is that he was the bad student. Because he was chosen to be the Polish foreign minister by the Marshal Piłsudski. And the Marshal Piłsudski, he died in the year 1935. And he said to Beck before his death, remember, whatever you do, you cannot count on French and the British because they will betray us. And the sense of Marshal Piłsudski politics was the biggest Polish enemy number one, was Soviet Union. And Marshal Piłsudski was the one who was the author of the pro-German line of the Polish politics. And he knew it very well, and he said to Beck, that if we will say no to Germans, there is a danger, there is a threat that the Germans will look for an alliance with Soviet Union. And unfortunately, Beck was, as I said, a bad student, and he forgot this lesson. He forgot the words of the great Polish marshal, and he decided to play a completely different game. And mainstream Polish historians, when they are asked about this, they ask that question, why Poland said no, they always said that this was the matter of honor, that Hitler wanted Poland to say yes for the annexation of the free state Danzig, and Poland decided to go to the war because of the honor, that we cannot say yes for such a proposition because it would be terrible for the Polish people to accept it, etc., etc. And it's not true.
Oh, so that's Beck, why you were saying that he was going on honor instead of on real politics, right?
Yes, instead of interests. And this is the famous speech of Beck. He made a speech in Polish Parliament in the May 1939 when he said that the most precious thing in the in the life of nations and countries is honor, and we are ready, he said, to fight for this honor with Germany, etc., etc. But this was only words. Mm-hmm. The true game of Beck was completely different. He thought that if he will say no to Hitler, and at the same time, he will say yes to the offer, alternative offer made by the Great Britain, the Poland will form a bloc, very powerful bloc, British, French, Polish bloc, that will circle Germany, and the Hitler will look at the map And Hitler would remember the defeat in the First World War when Germany was defeated during the war on two fronts. And Hitler will look at the map. He will see the huge Polish-French-British alliance and he will say, no, it is too risky. I am not going to go for a war. And back, and it's clearly, and you can find hundreds of documents on it, he thought that he will prevent the war, that Hitler will just be afraid of war in this situation, and Beck was absolutely sure that he is saving peace for Europe. And his biggest mistake was that he forgot that in this geopolitics of Europe, there was also another factor that he forgot about, and this was, of course, the Soviet Union. And we can see in the papers, Polish diplomatic papers, that Beck was completely and 100% sure that the alliance between Soviet Union and Germany is impossible because of the ideological differences between Stalin and Hitler and National Socialism and Communism. And this was his biggest mistake.
Excuse me. You're saying, all right, now there's some, I'm having a little bit of problems here because, you know, I think a large part of what was motivating Beck, because in 1938, there were still good relations between, at least on the surface, there were good relations between Poland and Hitler, between Beck and Hitler. But by, like you say, by 1939, particularly in the middle of 1939 or spring, it was began to deteriorate very badly. And so, you know, it's very possible that the British got in there and started talking to Beck more seriously and convincing him of things. But I think that also there was this Polish dream of taking Berlin. And you mentioned that Beck thought that they would there would be this encirclement and he would invade Germany, and Germany would have to either, you know, Germany would fall, or they would surrender in some way or something, and Poland would be victorious over Germany and take all this territory that they wanted and so on. And isn't that, again, that unrealistic, it wasn't clear thinking at all. It was this unrealistic heroics that Poland is so susceptible to, that the Polish are so susceptible to believing in this glorious Poland that is going to be far stronger and more important than they've ever been in the world.
Well, I think that there is a lot of confusion because the problem with the historians, wider, the problem with people, journalists, etc., etc., is that they are taking propaganda for the truth. And during the Second World War, especially in the 30s, before the war, every country have its own propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And the Poland was no exception. And you were right that according to Polish propaganda, in the late 30s, Polish propaganda said that if Hitler will try to attack us, after the 2 weeks, we will feed our horses in Berlin, and then we will capture the Eastern Prussia, etc., etc. But I don't think that they really think that this is possible. As I said before, I think that Beck was sure that he's preventing the war by allying with France and Great Britain. And speaking about the Polish dream of, as you said, a huge, powerful Poland, I think that this dream could come true in the 30s and 40s, but not in the West by capturing the German territory, but in the East by capturing the Soviet territory. And I'm sure that in the alliance with Germany in the first few years of the Second World War would open one of the biggest chances in the history of Poland, the chance to conquer huge parts of Soviet Union, that, by the way, couple of years before, actually 100 years before, were the part of Poland. Mm-hmm. Because if you will look at the map right now, Poland is a middle-sized European country. It's about, our territory is about 300,000 square kilometers. But a couple of hundreds years ago, it was about 1 million square kilometers. And we are still, a lot of Poles have this dream to rebuild this powerful state.
But you know, that state, that super large Polish state didn't last all that long. I mean, it was kind of an, it was there at a certain time, and it was kind of an aberration because it doesn't have a lot of, right? I mean, it doesn't have a lot of past to it.
Well, no, I think that this state lasts for about 500 years, so it's much more longer than America and the United States of America stays.
Yes,
so,
but what kind of a state was it? And you know, there wasn't anybody going after it at that time, obviously.
Well, I think that there was a time in the 16th century that the Poland was the biggest force in Europe. We were capturing Moscow a couple of times. We burnt Moscow in the beginning of 17th century. We were fighting with Sweden successfully. Our army, famous Polish horsemen, were undefeated. And I think that this project, it was called in Polish Rzeczpospolita. It was quite... And by the way, it was the first Republican state in Europe back then. So I think that this was not an aberration, as you said, but it was the Poland that that we still dream about.
Okay, I understand that. All right. Now, here is the crux of it for me in this book, and that is that you... as we've already mentioned, how you end it, how it develops, you know, when Poland, after Poland gets everything it wants, and then Germany is by itself now fighting England and the U.S., and but without Russia, they wouldn't have that as much trouble as, and they're only on one front. But you say that they're having the exact same difficult time as they had during the 40s when they were fighting on two fronts. And mm-hmm. then they are defeated, pretty much, or they get weaker and weaker, and they're losing battles. And then Poland turns against Germany and makes an alliance with the Allies. But the point is that you say that I actually went off somewhere else. What I wanted to say was, you say that after Soviet Union is defeated by Poland and Germany, then Germany has to still continue fighting the U.S. and England, and it begins in your book on the same date, you know, in 1940, and everything goes accordingly the same as it actually did then. Although, as I did point out, Germany is now on its own. It's got all the resources of the Soviet Union. It doesn't have the Soviet Union fighting it. And why would it continue along those same lines? I don't even think that the World War II would have developed after that. I don't see why once Poland allied so totally with Germany and they defeated the Soviet Union, why would the West continue to wage war against Hitler?
Well, first of all, this most optimistic scenario is just one of the scenarios that are being analyzed in the book. There are also
that's the only one I found that anybody wrote about. So sorry.
Oh, I see. Because there is also a pessimistic scenario, the most pessimistic, and the pessimistic scenario is that we even the Polish forces on the Eastern Front are not a factor that is helping the Axis power win the war. And there are a lot of other scenarios that are being discussed and analyzed in the book. But speaking about this most optimistic scenario, because I believe that there was a chance to fulfill this scenario. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think that the winning the war with Soviet Union would not make Hitler or Germany stronger, but weaker. It's a paradox. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago in the internet, the people were sharing a strange photograph that was made in Florida, so I remember, in a park, in a swamp, when the rangers found there some kind of a strange creature, deaf creature. I don't know if you saw this picture, and they analyzed it, and this was the deaf snake, the huge snake that were fighting with crocodile. And first of all, the snake win this war, and he swallowed the crocodile, really a huge crocodile. But after that, the crocodile was just too big for it, and he ripped the stomach of this huge snake, and the both creatures died. And I think that after conquering the Soviet Union, such a huge territory, the German divisions would just be there. They would be fighting the partisan war with the Russian or the Soviet partisans, and it would cost Germany a lot. And at the same time, we know that after conquering the Soviet Union, Hitler had a plan what to do. And according to his plan, he wanted to go through the Caucasian mountains to the Middle East. When the German agents were preparing the anti-British air uprising, Eichmann was in the 30s, he had a mission to go there and prepare this. And then after conquering the Middle East, Hitler wanted to go to India. And I am sure that after winning with Soviet Union, Hitler would try to do this. And the war with Anglo-Saxons, war with Great Britain and the United States would be still going on. And at the same time,
why would Hitler want to go to India?
Well, I don't know. You have to ask him, but this was his dream.
Who said it was his dream? I missed where that came from.
Well, there are a lot of books trying to with analyzing his plans, and there's no doubt about that he wanted to conquer the Middle East because of the natural resources of the Middle East, and this was something that Great Britain could not accept. And by the way, you asked me why I think that the war would probably go as it was in the real history. Mm-hmm. I think that we know the exactly date of German capitulation in the Second World War, even if Hitler would conquer Soviet Union, and I think that it would be August 1945.
August 1945 would be the capitulation of Germany in the war, in your scenario. And you think it also was in the real scenario?
Yeah, the reason is that Project Manhattan was finished back then, and I think that with America having the nuclear weapon, atom bombs, Germany would have, even if Hitler would conquer Soviet Union in August 1945, he would surrender to America.
Well, if Germany by 1941 was no longer having to fight the Soviet Union and was getting all that material and all those, well, it wouldn't have been that easy, but they'd have all those factories and all the armaments that they had, and they'd get some of that, and they had their own program going for what were called, I can't think of the name of it now, but super weapons, and
Wunderwaffe.
Yeah, and they would wonder weapons, yes, wonder weapons. And why would they not have made a lot of progress? They might not have had the atomic bomb, which the Americans didn't have until 45, but they would have had a lot of rockets and jets and so on. And, you know, they could have certainly taken over the British Isles. And, well, there's just so many variations. I just don't think that these... Like I said, I only am familiar with that one, and I can't read the book, so I'm just reading from what's been written about it. But you know, I just don't think that we can say that this or that would happen, because there's a lot of things left out that would also happen in favor of Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I agree with you 100%. That's why I analyzed a couple of scenarios. As I said, this is the most optimistic. But speaking about the German atomic bomb project, because it was, of course, such a thing existed. They made a couple of mistakes during the calculations at the beginning stage of this program, and probably they would be able to build its first atomic bomb in the year 1947.
But, so, you know, I don't think the Germans wanted to drop atomic bombs on people. I really don't. And we can get into that when we come back. Because I don't think the Germans had a lot of love for this atomic program, and that's why they didn't get that far in it. But the Americans, showing their real nature, went all out. And you know who was in charge of it. You know, it was all the Jews who went to the United States who built that atomic bomb. So I want to thank you for this first half. It's been great, and I'm really looking forward to the second hour. And we will continue to be...
Es ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimmt im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Ich schwöre dir, so wahr ich hier stehe, ich trage die Fahne, wohin ich auch gehe. Nie werde ich euch verraten. Für kein Geld der Welt, ich kämpfe für dich, ungebrochener Held, ich kämpfe für dich, unbekannter Held. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, ich gedanke zu mir sprich, du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben, nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimm dem Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Und wer da noch lügt, euer Namen benutzt, eure Heldentaten durch Geld ihr beschmutzt, den trifft das Schwert von unsichtbarer Hand, ein Totenwächter. Von Wotan gesandt, ein Totenwächter im schwarzen Gewand. Doch ich höre eine Stimme, die sanft zu mir spricht. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Es ist an der Zeit, übernimmt unseren Eid. Nimm dem Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Keine Hand, ihr seid nicht allein, egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Kamerad, du siehst, wir stehen für euch ein, die Kraft, die wir brauchen, wird uns Wotan verleihen. Ihr gabt so viel für dieses Land, es war der Glaube, der euch verband, es war der Glaube. Der euch verband. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, ich sag zu mir sprich, du Kamerad. verrat, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimmt im Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Und kehre ich einst an deinen Stein zurück, berichte ich dir von unserem Glück. Dann ist es geschafft und wir sind wieder frei. Dein Grab blüht wieder, darum ging's mir dabei. Dein Grab blüht wieder, denn jetzt sind wir frei. Doch ich höre deine Stimme, die sanft zu mir spricht. Du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben und bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Nun ist an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Eid. Nimm dem Geiste die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein. Ich höre eine Stimme, sanft zu mir spricht, du Kamerad, bitte verrat uns nicht. Wir haben alles gegeben, bezahlt mit unserem Leben. Und bis an der Zeit, übernehmt unseren Halt. Wir sind Geiste, die Waffen, ich weiß, ihr werdet schaffen. Und habt keine Angst, ihr seid nicht allein. Egal was geschieht, wir werden bei euch sein.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager, and you're listening to Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. And I have a wonderful guest today, Peter Zajkowicz from Warsaw, Poland. He's a historian of the younger generation of new thinkers in Poland, and he has two books, Pact Ribbentrop-Beck, which we've been talking about, and there's a lot more we could say about it. But I was thinking, Peter, that we should move on to your second book, your newest book, Madness 44 in English, and then we can go back to some questions about from our previous discussion, because this one I don't think will take as long, unless there's something from what we were just saying that you want to get in right now. That's perfectly all right.
No, we can move to the second book.
Okay, well, now do you know if either of your books are being translated? Are any plans for them to be translated into English or any other language?
Well, I don't know anything about that, unfortunately.
Okay, so I would really like to read both of them. All right, Madness 44, or it could also be translated as lunacy, couldn't it? But I guess that's maybe a stronger word than people want to use for it. But is referring to the Warsaw Uprising in 1944 that you are one of the first people, I guess, or first Polish people. Not actually, there are some people who have said it before, but you're the first historian maybe that has said that you think this was a very big mistake and should never have taken place. And this is hurting the feelings of Polish sensibilities very much, because this has been pictured as a great heroic action on the part of Poles. What more can you tell us about why you wrote this book? One more thing before you start. Could you give your description of the difference between the Warsaw Uprising and the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, because I think a lot of people don't realize they're two different things.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of confusion about those two uprisings. The first one was the Ghetto Uprising in the year 1943. It was an action made by Jewish underground organization in April 1943. There was about 200 fighters in the Warsaw Ghetto, Jewish ghetto, and they decided to fight. And they were fighting with the Germans, but this action was comparing to the Warsaw Uprising, the Polish Warsaw Uprising, the scale of this action was very little. As I remember, there was a lot of about 16 Germans killed in this action, something around that. And as a consequence of this action, the whole Jewish district, Jewish ghetto was destroyed. And till today, this uprising, Jewish uprising in Warsaw is portrayed as the one of the biggest, if not the biggest, act of courage, Jewish courage during the Second World War. And the second uprising, Polish uprising, was a huge battle. It started in August, the 1st of August 1944, so a year later. And it was conducted by the Polish Home Army, a very huge organization. In Warsaw, it was about 50,000 fighters, and they were fighting for 2 months with Germans. Unfortunately, they lost this battle, and the whole Warsaw, in the consequence of this battle, was wiped out. So if I would have to show the differences between those two uprisings, there is, of course, the scale is completely different. And it's quite surprising that many people in the West heard only about this Jewish uprising from 1943, and they did not heard about the Polish uprising in 1944. And it's it caused a lot of frustration in Poland. you said that most of the Poles thinks that Warsaw Uprising was a courageous act and the act of and I share that opinion. I think that the Polish Home Army on the streets of Warsaw during the 2 month battle with Germans showed a huge courage, and they were fighting like lions. But and they are the heroes of the Polish history. My father was fighting in this uprising, and many members of my family. But at the same time, my huge respect for the soldiers has not meant that I cannot discuss the same decision. And in my opinion, the decision was made by the generals of the Home Army. And the decision was a huge mistake. First reason is that Germans were leaving Poland and the Soviets were coming. So it's obvious that the enemy number one were the Soviets. And there was no sense in fighting the Germans because they were no threat for Poland anymore. They were leaving Poland. And Polish underground state should, in my opinion, focus on the new occupier, Soviet Union. And this is the other thing that the many people in the West cannot accept, they cannot understand, because for the Western Europe, for France, Belgium, Holland, etc., etc., the year 1944, it was the year of liberation. But because those countries were liberated by the American forces, but for the Eastern Europe, for Poland, Hungary, Czech Republic, and the other countries of my region, year of 1944 was the year of tragedy, because we were not liberated by Stalin and the Red Army, but this was the year when the other occupation started, the Soviet occupation, and it lasted till the year 1993. Because in the year 1993, the last Soviet soldier left Poland, so it lasted for half of century. But coming back to the Warsaw Uprising, so this was unlogic, in my opinion, to fight the Germans when they are leaving Poland and the Soviets are coming. And there is another reason why I think that this was a huge mistake, and this is the disproportion between Polish Home Army and the Wehrmacht and SS units in Warsaw. We did not have had planes, tanks, artillery, and there were a lot of people, even back then, the officers of the Home Army, that were saying that this is madness, and everything that the only consequence of this action would be a bloodshed. And they were right. A price was really huge. As I said, the whole Warsaw was wiped out. But this is something really terrible. But during this two-month battle, 200,000 Poles were killed or murdered by the Germans. And this is really something terrible. And this is the sad consequence of this unrealistic decision to fight with the Germans on the streets of city, of the huge city inhabited by the 1 million civilians.
Yes, and they're also responsible for the death of 8,000 German soldiers, and then there was a bunch more than that who were wounded because they decided to do this uprising. It works all kinds of ways. Where this was a foolish decision, you explained it, and there's even more reason for it, because for them to, they believed that that they were allies with the Soviet Union at that time, this Home Army did, and they were helping the Soviet Union and giving them information and so on, and now the Soviets were coming close, and the Soviet Union was putting out on its radio, calling for the whole Polish, the people in Warsaw, to rise up against the Germans, and then Stalin stopped his Red Army right outside the very, not very far from Warsaw, and didn't continue and let that thing go on, and never did lift a finger to help the Home Army there. So I believe that, and then one of the reasons that is given for why they made the decision to do it was that supposedly, they wanted to liberate their city themselves, their capital. They didn't want the Red Army to come and liberate them because they knew enough about the Soviets and Stalin. So they wanted to have done it themselves so that they would have a sense of ownership of that and they would be in control there when it was all over and done with. And that is probably why Stalin didn't help them out. And not only that, he wouldn't even allow the United States to have to come over their airspace to help drop supplies into Warsaw. But finally, when he did allow it, they came and did one drop. But I mean, they were totally uncooperative with the whole thing. And yet still, at the end, they were part of the Allies, and they were the ones the Poles looked up to until, of course, they couldn't say another word. Nobody could hear what they said anymore once the Iron Curtain came down.
Well, basically, this was the way how they were thinking, and unfortunately, it was a huge, huge illusion, counting on Stalin. And it's really hard to understand, because the history of the Soviet-Polish relations during the Second World War was the history of crime committed by the Soviets. Mm-hmm. Everything started in September 1939, when Poland was fighting with the Germans. 2 weeks after the war began, the Soviet Union attacked Poland from behind. The Red Army came. They made a lot of massacres, and they killed a lot of Polish people during this attack, this aggression. Then they annexed the half of Poland. Then they made a huge, huge deportation of Poles to Siberia, a couple of 100,000 people, and then in the April of 1940, they committed the most terrible crime in the history of Polish nation, the Katyn massacre. They murdered the Polish officers they captured during the aggression in 1939 by shooting them in the back of their heads in Katyn and in the other places of Soviet Union. And this is one of the biggest secrets of the Polish history. Why, after all this what happened, after all these terrible Soviet crimes against Poland, when the Soviets came to Poland in 1944, the Home Army, as you said, were helping Soviets, and why that they were counting on Soviet help in Warsaw during the uprising. This is something that I cannot understand, and this is a huge illusion. And I used in my book the words that really shocked a lot of people in Poland, but in my opinion, helping Soviet invaders in 1944 was an act of collaboration with the enemy. And unfortunately, this word collaboration sparks a huge outrage in Poland, and the people said that you can collaborate only with the Germans and you cannot collaborate with the Soviets. And in my opinion, it's stupid and it's unlogic, because collaboration is just, as you said, helping the enemy, and the Soviet Union was a Polish enemy. And basically, this is one of the theses, main theses of the book, that Poles forgot the Katyn massacre and the Katyn genocide, and counting on Stalin that he will come and help the Home Army in Warsaw was an act of foolishness, because Stalin considered Home Army as an enemy. And when the Germans started to murdering Poles in Warsaw, when the uprising started, and killing the Home Army soldiers, Stalin said stop to the Red Army. Red Army stopped on the right bank of Vistula River and just waited. And Hitler made a, let's say, dirty job for Stalin in
summer. Stalin was probably wanted the Germans to kill as many Poles as possible, because these were the fighters, these were the, you know, the patriotic Poles and so on. And so, like you say, he had for him, Hitler was doing the job for him.
The title of my book is Madness 44, but the book has also a subtitle, and it's called it's Madness 44, How Poles Made a Present to Stalin, Gift to Stalin, by Starting the Warsaw Uprising. There is no doubt about that the Warsaw Uprising and the bloodshed of Warsaw, because the Germans made really terrible, terrible things in Warsaw during the uprising, it was not in the interest of Germany, was not in the interest of Poland, of course, because it was the biggest tragedy in the history of my nation. It was not in the interest of America, Thailand, any other state, but it was in the interest of Soviet Union and Joseph Stalin. When Warsaw was destroyed during the uprising, the Polish Home Army and the whole Polish underground state was crushed during this uprising. Stalin's plan to conquer Poland and made Poland his satellite states was much, much more easier than before.
Well, right. And like, for example, as you said, the Poles forget about Katyn. They are so propagandized to see Hitler and Germany and the Third Reich and National Socialism as the most terrible enemy ever, that all these worst things that were done by Stalin. Well, you might say they're not worse, but you just were talking about how terrible the put down of the Warsaw Uprising was. But, you know, I mean, this was at this time Germany was really fighting for its life, and here these Poles decided to cause all this trouble in at this last minute, which is why you say it wasn't very smart. And so they were very angry, and they probably the order was put this down in any way you can, you know, no mercy.
Well, I have to tell you three things. First of all, I will tell you something that is very shocking for the Polish readers: the Germans did not fight in the 1944 for their own country, but they were fighting also for Poland, because the Germans and the Wehrmacht was the only power in the world that could stop or slow down the Soviet offensive on Europe, mm-hmm. and Soviet offensive on Poland. So, in my opinion, Poles shooting or attacking the Germans were acting against its own interests. This is the first thing. The other thing is, you said that the Poles were under the huge pressure of propaganda, and that's true, especially a propaganda from Great Britain and America. This propaganda was telling the Poles that Hitler is the only devil, and everybody who is fighting with Hitler is a good guy, especially Uncle Joe. And this was crazy, and this was not true. But there is also another factor that was very, very important, maybe the most important, and this was Hitler himself, or wider, the German authorities in occupied Poland. Because the German occupation of Poland, or wider, the German occupation of the Eastern Europe, was not only genocidal, but stupid. Because in my opinion, there is no doubt about that. The Germans and the Poles had the same enemy, the Soviet Union, and they had a common interest not to let the Soviet Union to the Eastern or Central Europe. That's obvious. But unfortunately, after the year 1939, the German policy, so-called Polenpolitik, the occupation of Poland was a one big crime. The terror of Gestapo, SS, and the other German units in Poland was, so terrible. Millions of people.
You have incontrovertible evidence for all of that. I mean, I hear that all the time from that side, but I don't know that that would be, is not necessarily in the interest of Germany, unless the Poles were simply all acting in the way, acting like enemies. And I think that a large part they were, but idea that the occupation of Eastern Europe by the Germans starting in 1939 was genocidal to the Slavic people.
Well, it looked different in the different countries, but in Poland, it really looked pretty bad, because of course, there were the part of German terror that was the revenge for the attacks of Polish underground state. There is no doubt about that. But at the same beginning of the occupation, in the year 1939, in autumn, when Poland collapsed, especially in the Western Poland, there was a very, very brutal German operation against the Polish elites, and many, many thousand people were killed during this operation, unfortunately. And you ask me about the evidence. One of the evidence is the fact that members of my family were executed back then. And it's a historical fact. And as I said, it's not only murderous, but moral. But it was very, very stupid, because the Poles, after this, what happened? I don't
know. The Poles put up a big – the Poles instigated the invasion of Germany into Poland. They instigated that German-Polish war. Then they fought fiercely, and a lot of Germans died in that war, and there was a lot of losses that Germany had to take. And so they are very angry and fed up and angry with the Poles in Poland. I know that's true. And that might not be the most reasonable way to act, but that's what they said, you know, we're going to crush this. We're going to crush Poland. Well, we're not going to have them fighting against us and starting this stuff anymore because, you know, they had been a problem for quite some time. So well, there was that.
Well, I'm afraid that it's completely unacceptable, and I'm not speaking from the Polish point of view, but I'm speaking from the moral point of view.
Well, I don't know, because I asked you for evidence. I don't immediately be arguing. I'm real happy with you on the program today. But you brought up members of your family. You didn't give any real evidence about how bad
you have a mess. You have the mass graves of Poles killed during the first months and weeks of occupation in the Western Poland, and it's hundreds of them.
I would like to know, where are they mapped out? Because, and then we have to remember Katyn, where Katyn was blamed on Germany, and it was that held for a long time, when all along it was the Soviets, and the Soviets were doing a lot of killing as they left Poland.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you have to look at this in the perspective of the international law, first of all. And you said that they were dragged by anger that Poland started a war, as you said, with Germany. But the anger is not a political feeling, and they could be angry. But after you are conquering the country and you are controlling territory of your enemy, you cannot kill the civilians because of anger, because it's not only immoral.
Well, I don't know if they were killing civilians. You said yourself that there was this underground that kept fighting. And the problem that the Germans had in Poland, which they didn't have in a lot of other places, is that they just kept fighting underground. And they were very organized with that, and so this caused a lot of not just combat deaths, but this caused terrible this was terrorism in itself and guerrilla warfare against German troops, which was pretty brutal and pretty masochistic, you know. And a lot of this was done. And then I have to ask you, I don't want to put you, I know this is not what you want to talk about, but...
I have to tell one thing.
Okay, all right.
It's very, very important. As I said, there was two types of German terror. One, let's call it the revenge terror, and it's a fact that after the Polish underground army, I don't know, killed a German soldier on the street or destroyed a German train going to the Eastern Front, the Germans were killing, it looked like that. They were going to the nearest Polish village and they were killing everybody there. But there was, and we can discuss if this was provoked or not provoked by the Polish underground state. But there was also, as I said, the completely different type of terror that was unprovoked, the terror that was... the target of this terror were the Polish elite, intelligentsia, etc., etc. And this was a really, really terrible bloodshed. And there is also the third factor that I forgot to mention before. They killed a lot of people, which was very terrible against the law, international law. But they also made something that was maybe even worse. They were humiliating Poles. I mean that in Warsaw, when there was a... bus, one section of the bus was Nur für Deutsche, only for the Germans, and it was empty, and the other side of the bus was for the Poles, so the Poles were treated like some kind of, I don't know, the black people in the colonized empire. There were parks that Poles were not allowed. And there were restaurants and bars.
Well, that I can understand. I really can understand all that. And I don't see that that's the worst of it, the killing people. How about... Go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
Well, but remember, this was our state. The facts are
not anymore. You lost the war. You were totally occupied.
That's true. That's true. But try to think what the young Poles.
Well, I certainly
when they saw the parks in their own cities that were nur für Deutsche. But as I told you, in my opinion. This was a very stupid policy from the point of view of Germany because the people were getting angry and, terror.
Well, anger works both ways. Okay, I understand that. I think the more serious part, though, that you talk about is you're saying that the Germans in the eastern part of they were murdering the elites by the thousands, you said, and this was a terrible, terrible thing. Well, I thought it was the Russians who were murdering the elites, and they had murdered all those 20,000 or more than that?
Yes, the problem was in the situation of Poland that borrowed our...
I never heard of Germans murdering the elites of the country. I would like to know where to read about this. Where can I read about this in English?
Well, I think that I can. There is very good book by the Professor Richard C. Lucas. It's called I don't know what's the title. I guess that it's called The Polish Holocaust. Quite controversial books. When he finished this book, and when this book, I don't know, it was probably. I saw the New York edition, but when it came out, the Jewish historians, they were outraged. And
yes, I'm familiar with this book, actually, although I haven't read it. But are you saying that this is where you get this from the Lucas book? The idea?
No. The Lucas book is just a book for the people in the Western Europe to know something about the Polish fate during the Second World War, but everything what I told you I'm taking from the Polish archives, and you can trust me that the German occupation of Poland was a really, really very, very nasty thing.
I don't fully trust the Polish archives. I don't. And if they're in the Polish archives, and I can't, read, I don't trust the German archives either. No, they're not. They're not accurate either. They're not honest. So, but I suppose there are some things in the German archives. It depends, and if you're talking about the German archives from back then, if they actually have things, the reports and papers and things, or if they're what's being put in there, what's being written now. But the German, I don't trust a lot of this, but I would certainly look at it. I mean, I don't know any languages, and that's my problem. But I know plenty of people do, and I haven't heard any corroboration that I can understand from anybody who would be even at least sympathetic with the Germans, that the Germans were actually doing these kind of terrible things. I know that the repression in Poland was pretty brutal, but that was because, they weren't going along with it, And somewhere you mentioned, I need to add one thing here, though. I'm going to bring up this thing, the J word again. In the Polish underground that the Germans were, hated so much, were trying to squash out, how much of it was Jewish, would you say?
The Polish underground, the Jewish people?
Yeah.
Well, it's really hard to say because, I don't think that the line between the Poles and the Jews was very sharp. I mean that the Jews were the citizens of Poland. In the Polish army, regular army during the war with Germany and Soviet Union in 1939, there was a lot about, 8% of the Jewish soldiers. By the way, in Wehrmacht, there was also a lot of Jewish soldiers. I'm sure that the book by Mark Rieck.
There are some, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Not, and, they're certainly not in a kind of huge numbers.
Well, because the number of Jews in Germany was much more smaller than in Poland, but many Jews felt that they are Poles.
Well, sure, that's what I'm saying. I'm not arguing with that. So if you have the underground is Polish Jews, and the Jews did take a far more bigger interest in being anti-German than maybe a lot of Poles would have taken. So they were maybe a big influence in what the underground, how the underground was behaving and how the resistance fighters were doing things. And a lot of them were Jews, and a lot of those people that the Germans were going after the Jews because they were so vicious.
Well, I'm a little surprised by that, but speaking absolutely seriously, to be honest with you, the influence of Jews on the Polish underground was really not very big, because first of all, they had their own organizations. The left wing was called ZOP, which could be translated the Jewish Fighting Organization. And the right-wing Jewish organization was called the Jewish ZZW, Jewish War Organization, would be closest to the original. And they had own underground. And this is not a big secret that the Poles, before the war in the 30s, they were not, let's say, very pro-Jewish, let's say like that.
That's right.
And the percentage of the Jews in the Polish underground was really, really completely marginal. And the reason why Poles hated the Germans so much was not the Jewish influence, but, as I told you, the British propaganda and the vicious crimes of Germany.
Yes. Well, that brings up something I've been wanting to ask, too. How do you look at Great Britain and France and the United States today, as countries today, and also as the part that they played in causing so much suffering and tragedy in Poland?
Well, actually, I'm really very, very critical. I think that Churchill is one of the most terrible characters in the whole history of Poland, because the whole problem with Poland saying no to the German proposal in 1930s was that this was the British trap, and I will tell you what I mean. Great Britain wanted to do everything in the late 30s to provoke Hitler attacking Eastern Europe, not the Western Europe. And the whole sense of the British proposal, because the British in the March of 1939 proposed a pact, that we were so stupid that we said yes to this proposition. And the whole idea of this pact was to provoke Hitler attacking Poland. And that's what happened. And at the same moment when the British government signed the pact with Poland, they knew that they will not help us. They just wanted Poland to be destroyed by the Germans, because they wanted to get some time to arm the armed forces.
That is really, really treacherous. That is the worst thing I've just about ever heard, but I believe it. I'm really happy to hear you say that.
It was really terrible. And, you know, when the Great Britain declared a war to Germany in 3rd of September 1939, in a square in front of the British Embassy in Warsaw, there was an enthusiastic crowd of Poles waving the Union Jacks and singing songs about Polish-British friendship. And this was such an illusion, because they were just trapped, and my country was just trapped by the Great Britain. And it is something really terrible. And the same happened in the year 1944, when one of the reasons why those generals decided to make an uprising was that they were sure that the alliance with Great Britain is strong and Great Britain will come to help. And Great Britain was so afraid of Stalin, of Uncle Joe, that they did nothing to help the Polish capital that was burning, that was in the agony. And then, and even before that, in Tehran conference in the November 1943, the British government sold his Polish ally to Stalin. And it was really vicious, because in the year 1939 we were dying for Great Britain. And then after the war, they sold us like a, you know, like a cow or something like that to Stalin. And one of the biggest, one of my favorite characters from the Polish history is the Polish conservatives, conservative pro-German politician. His name is Władysław Studnicki. I'm preparing a book about him. And he... Before the war, he wrote a letter to Józef Beck, and he wrote something like that. You cannot say no to Germany, and you cannot say yes to Great Britain, because Great Britain will not help us, and when Poland will collapse during the war with Germany, Great Britain will do everything, to bring Soviet Union to the anti-German coalition, because Britain would do everything to spark the Soviet-German war, because Britain is always fighting the wars with the not its own soldiers, but the soldiers of different countries, and they will try to win the Second World War with the Soviet soldiers. And then Studnicki wrote in 1939, before the war, when Soviet Union will start a war with Germany, and when the British-Soviet coalition will win this war with Germany, the Great Britain will have to pay Stalin for this war with something. And Great Britain will not pay with Afghanistan or India, but the only country that Great Britain could pay Stalin is Poland. And that's what happened. So, in my opinion, Władysław Studnicki, who was, by the way, till the end of his life, the big, big advocate of the Polish-German alliance, if he would be a president of Poland or the prime minister of Poland in 1939, the history would probably be completely different.
Well, considering all that, what do you... How friendly do you feel toward Great Britain today? And by the way, now since the 1980s, Great Britain has been selling out its own people to whoever they're doing it to, and I leave it to your imagination, but they've been selling out their own people by allowing the country to be invaded by non-white immigrants to the extent that it is. At this point, London has just become minority white.
And this is suicidal, I guess, but remember what they done with their own people in Rhodesia. This is something terrible. They left the white farmers to be killed by the mobs of Mugabe. This is something really terrible and devastating. But I think that I said at the beginning of the program of the show, I think that if there are any Poles, and unfortunately there is a lot of Poles today that think that we have to be in an alliance with Great Britain or with the United States, so they are repeating, in my opinion, the same mistake that our leaders made in the year 1939 and then in 1944. Because the fate... that when the problems will start in Eastern Europe, and I'm sure that they will start, Mr. Obama will come here with the American soldiers and save Poland is a huge, huge illusion. They will not come. British soldiers will not die for Poland. French soldiers will not die for Poland. And in my opinion, we cannot look for the allies far, far away, but we have to look for the allies close. And I'm very pretty sure that the ally for Poland is Germany.
Let me just throw up. I want to respond to that. But do you see the United States as being any better than Great Britain?
Well, I you know, it's like choosing between two diseases. I think that the problem is that some people in Poland believe they have a dream that Poland will become the Eastern Europe Israel, that Poland will can count on America. But the difference between Poland and Israel, the first difference is that there is no Polish lobby in Washington.
True.
And the second problem and the second difference is the fact that if Israel will be attacked by its neighbors, there is a pretty good chance that the U.S. Army will come with help, because the neighbors of Israel are very weak. But the biggest enemy of Poland, the country that is quite close, is very, very strong, and this country have a nuclear arsenal. And there is no doubt that America would not risk a nuclear war helping this small, forgotten country somewhere in Eastern Europe. I'm sure that if we would leave the studio right now and ask the passersby, what is Poland, where is Poland, 90% of them would just said they don't have any idea about that. So I think that if there is a lesson that we have to learn from the Second World War, that we have to think realistic, not count on exotic alliance like allies like America or Great Britain, but we have to, you know, make the realpolitik, as Germans say.
Right. Well, this, you know, you said that you think now the best ally for Poland is Germany. Do you think that in order to make that work better, that there should be some reassessment of World War II history? Of course, I realize that Germany, the present government of Germany, the Federal Republic, is in the forefront of leading that that history as it is, you know, as it was decided at Nuremberg. So I don't even consider the German government, the German Federal Republic, to be the true government of the German people. But, you know, we're in this bind here. You can't really do much about it. And that brings me again to the European Union. So, well, for the first time. But so could you answer that about how truth could be furthered? We could make some improvements in finding the real truth between Poland and Germany, and also what about the European Union and its influence?
Well, first of all, the problem with Germany is that Germany is a country with a plan. And if you will look, I see that you are against the current government of Germany, but that surprised me, because this government is doing or trying to achieve the same goal that Hitler was trying to achieve, but the difference is only that they are trying to do it with the different tools. Hitler was trying to do it with tanks, and Angela Merkel is trying to do this with banks and money, okay. and Eurozone. And I think that from the perspective of the neighbors of Germany, the current German government is much more better. But seriously speaking, I think that this decision of in Poland was made after the collapse of communism. We are very pro-German. Our country, our elites are, you know, meeting with the German elites. The border right now between Germany and Poland is open. We are meeting each other. We are buying something from them. They are buying something from us. And, you know, the economy is flourishing thanks to that. And I think that the European Union is sometimes very disturbing. I mean the ideological face of European Union. As I said at the beginning, I am a conservative, so it's hard for me to accept all those, you know, crazy left-wing stupidities like, you know, homosexual marriages, etc., which I think that is suicidal and from the point of view of the European civilization, or...
Well, the German government sure doesn't think so.
Unfortunately.
The German Federal Republic goes along with all of that.
Unfortunately.
And, yeah, and doesn't want to stand up for the German people either, and doesn't want German people to have any pride in being German, because that's too nationalistic, and that's too much like it was in the Third Reich.
I think that... Speaking about the European Union, I think that it's quite a good project, because it's keeping the Europeans together in the political
sense. Is it? I shouldn't talk like that. I can't agree that it is keeping the European people together. It's trying to destroy the national feeling of the various peoples, and by immigration. The whole thing about the European Union is to integrate everything and everybody, including non-Europeans, to come into Europe. And you don't have that problem much in Poland, because they're not coming to Poland, but they're sure going to Germany and France and Great Britain, which I don't really consider they're all that much a part of Europe. They're more like allied with the United States. So I wouldn't, you know, Hitler did not include Great Britain in Europe, because he said they're always trying to control Europe by playing one nation off against the other and so on.
Yeah, that's true, of course, but remember that, as I said, the European Union has a bad side, the bad face, and that includes the, of course, the mass immigration from the Islamic states. It's crazy, and it's killing France right now. But as I said, there is also the other part of this story, from the political point of view. The dream of federal Europe is something, you know, worth to consider. And remember that Adolf Hitler was thinking about the same.
Yeah, but he had a different, he didn't include as many countries as are included now. And there's too many countries being included on a basis of equality. That I think is the problem. But let's get back, because we only have about 6 minutes to go. So I want to give you the opportunity, Peter, and I want to say right now, in case I don't get it in at the end, I want to thank you so much for being on. It's been most enjoyable and interesting for me, and I hope it has been pleasant enough for you. But I would like to give you an opportunity to talk about your books, anything you didn't talk about, or any other thing you want to say to the listeners in the 5 minutes that we've got.
Well, so first of all, thank you very much for an invitation. Probably we have some things in common, and as listeners heard some things that are completely different. But I think that my books really started a huge discussion in Poland, and about Polish-German relations, and about the place of Poland in the world. And you know, the problem with the Poles is that they are not thinking realistic about their politics. We are just thinking about ourselves, that we are, you know, the most important country in the world, that our mission, the mission of Poland, is to save the world. As one of the Polish poets said, the Poland is the Christ of the nations. And I think that this attitude costs us really terrible, terrible tragedies. And
you know, Poland is very Catholic. Let me just throw this in here. Sorry. Poland is very Catholic. Is it still as Catholic? I mean, do they take it as seriously as they did back in the time we've been discussing? And do you think that is a good or bad influence on Poland?
Well, I think that this is another discussion, and we probably would need another 2 hours to discuss mm-hmm. that. But just to tell you one thing, one of the reasons why the Poland is completely different than the the Western part of European Union, let's say Paris, is the fact that 90% of the Poles are Catholics, and the mass attendance is huge, the biggest in Europe, and Poland is much, much more conservative than, let's say, France or Great Britain. Situation I cannot imagine, you know, legalizing the homosexual so-called gay marriages in Poland. I cannot imagine a huge influx of Arabic immigrants. So it's a completely different world. And one of the reasons is the fact that the Catholic Church is so strong and powerful here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they in Hungary and Romania, church attendance is way down, I understand. It's not as bad as in Western Europe. But they also are trying to hold on to these kind of values, I think. Or am I wrong about that?
Well, they are trying, yes, you're right about that. They are trying, but this is they are. I said that I think that it would be fair to say that they are in the middle of the world road between Poland and France. This is
well, I think you're right. Yeah,
Poland is something really unique in the scale of Europe, and but I'd like to say one thing at the end. I think that the problem with Poland during the Second World War was that we naively believed that the goal or that the Poles have to die during this war, that we have to, you know, send our children, the best Polish soldiers, to die in battles in Africa.
Only 30 seconds.
Etc., etc. And I think that is foolish, that Poles have to count their soldiers. And I'd like to end with the quotation from General Patton that I admire, anti-Soviet American general. And he said once that to his soldiers that you are not going for war to die for your homeland, but to the other guy be killed for his homeland. And I think that this is something that I'd like to bring to the Poles.
Thank you very much. Good night. Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.